oh my. Put me in, coach, I'm ready to play fantasy. I know I turned 2 in a day, but the lace isn't hot in my veins. I can turn 2 in every way, so I turn to you 2 today and smash play. I'm prepared to listen. The X flipping whip got me looking way past the pitches. Statistics all that I know, and I know that who is on first, he can say I'm ready to go. I ain't trying to steal second or third, cause I wanna win first. How am I to put all of these numbers to words? I know the terms from A to Z, it's like a gift and a curse. I know the difference between a splitter and a curve, but if I can't put it into points, man, then what's it worth? I need the truth, I need knowledge. Found this podcast with all of it, but what they call it? Turn two. Turn two, what it do? Win leagues.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Turn 2 Podcast bonus episode. We got 2 this week. Why? Because baseball is almost here, and I'm completely ridiculously excited to talk about baseball. I'm going to do it every single day. And I'm joined by my good friend here, Turn 2 OG, Mr. John L., MLB Moving Averages. Welcome to the show, buddy.
Yes, Matt, it's good to be back. I've been listening, and the shows have been excellent. I just caught you speaking with James Anderson, and the one before that with Eddie was phenomenal. And you know what? I have to mention it because we were just talking about it before we got in the air. Those StatCast kind of tutorial episodes you did, man, I'm using them, and I guess I'm at the very least an advanced player. So really, you're doing an excellent job. I'm glad to be back.
Man, I appreciate that. Yeah, those are fun to do. There were weird solo episodes because I had like the little soundtrack in the background, because it's weird kind of like sitting here and manufacturing enthusiasm doing a show by yourself. But yeah, they're always fun to do. And yeah, hopefully people got something out of them. If you haven't listened to them, I break down all the differences between the stats that are on Fangraphs, Baseball Savant, what the similar ones and how they're different, like, you know, swing strike percentage and whiff percentage and, you know, K per nine versus K percentage and all the different plate discipline, pretty much everything that you can do with like batted ball data. And if you're ever confused or want more information about how to use that information to break down your own players, do your own player analysis, go back and check those out, because yeah, I put a lot of time into them, and I think you find some use.
Matt, let me just say also, in particular, the reason these things are so important is because for all the really smart people doing really smart things, we kind of struggle with labeling in baseball, fantasy baseball analytics. Hard hit rate is a good example, right? I that's probably the best example to point people to, because you're quoting Fangraphs. I don't mean you, but one person A is quoting Fangraphs, person B is quoting StatCast. They have the same exact name, and they're 2 different measurements. So it really is important to get down to the definitions. You pointed me towards swinging strike and whiff, because when you get into Savant, they're very detailed, and you just did a great job. So yeah, it's really important to know the terms, people, before you start applying them. You don't want to. That's like the worst feeling, Matt. I don't know if you've ever gone through that, putting out work where the numbers were wrong, but it's horrible.
Yeah, it can be. Yeah. So if anyone listening, they're real quick episodes, like a half an hour. So, I mean, for example, you just brought up hard percentage versus hard hit percentage. Hard percentage is what they use on Fangraphs, just to do something really quick. And on Fangraphs, the way they judge hard contact is basically like airtime, like almost like a punt in football. They judge how hard the ball is hit, how long it hangs in the air, and then where it gets caught on the field. And that's how they kind of determine whether something is a ground ball, line drive, or fly ball, and also soft, weak, and hard percentage. Whereas Baseball Savant and hard hit percentage, just if it's over like 95 miles an hour,
right,
it's a hard hit ball.
And so then it's one better, if you look at Chamberlain's leaderboard, I'm noticing now they're separating fly balls from pop-ups also, right? I mean, fly balls and pop-ups were kind of getting clumped together, and they're not, right? When we think about a fly ball pitcher, normally the thing we're implying is home runs might be behind there.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily even fly balls. Is one site has infield, like Fangraphs has infield fly balls, and Savant has pop-ups, pop-ups, they actually are measuring balls that are like just outside of the infield grass, which are still pop-ups, but they're not an infield fly because they're not in the infield. So it's all, it's all different in the way they measured it. So today's episode, like I haven't even discussed with the audience yet, we're going to be talking warm takes, which is basically hot takes, which are not insane, which I'm sure we'll get a few insane ones in there anyway, because we can't help it, but warm takes. But before we get into that, John, do you like best ball?
I love playing best ball because I'm extremely busy. You don't talk this fast unless you have a lot of stuff going on. So best ball kind of lets me prep while other people are worrying about football and stay sharp to ADP markets. And then once the drafts end, I don't have to put in any work. So I swear by it. I absolutely love it, and it's part of my portfolio.
So we're going to have a word from our sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Fantasy baseball is here, and you've got to check out these new best ball leagues on Underdog. Best ball is the ultimate test of live draft skills since there is no in-season management. That's right. Draft your team. Underdog automatically credits you with your best performing players every week, like best ball and golf. Everyone takes a shot. Only the best shot survives. You don't need to play the waiver wire or worry about trades. It's just the draft, which is by far the best part of the entire year. Who doesn't love drafting? In Underdog best ball, you draft as many times as you want because you don't have to do any roster management, saving you loads of time. Underdog's best ball leagues are drafting right now, starting as low as $3. So once the season starts, Underdog has daily fantasy, DFS, and an all-new pick'em game as well. So download the app. You'll have multiple options. So go download the Underdog app and get in on some of these best ball before the season starts. Enter promo code TURN2 with your first deposit, and Underdog will honor a money-back guarantee. So if you try it and it's not for you, they will absolutely give you all your money back during your first month. But you're going to love Underdog or your money back. So go search Underdog in the App Store, enter promo code TURN2 and get started. So getting into the actual point of the episode, warm takes. Everyone's throwing out their hot takes, which I can't help but think of Michael Semien. I don't know why I keep picking on him because he did an article for Fangraphs. For anyone who doesn't follow, he's at SP Streamer on Twitter. Very, very sharp guy. Has, you know, SP Streamer. He streams, his expertise is streaming pitchers. He has like an impeccable record. He's one of the best in the whole industry of what he does. But he put out an article on Fangraphs for some of his hot takes, and he had some in there, like Aaron Civale will be the SP2 for the Indians.
Oh, that's a good one.
Which, you know, it's that's fine. If you don't like, I think he believes in Zach Plesac, but he just loves Aaron Civale. But then he had some in there like Alec Mills would be the ace of the Cubs, which I gave him a big hard time about. And the whole thing is like, if Kyle Hendricks, you know, comes back to the pack this year at his age and Alec Mills steps forward. So those are out there. We're talking some that are not quite as out there. So, and you know, these are things that we actually expect could realistically happen. So, John, I'll let you lead us off. What is a warm take you have that you think is something that's going to happen this year, but like, is it not necessarily like popular thinking?
Oh man, there were a couple. Like, it's a funny warm takes. I have plenty of cold takes. I know one of them was that I think Davey Garcia is going to be the Yankees second most profitable starter in fantasy by the time we get to the end of the year.
Who do you think their first is?
Oh, come on, stop that. That would have went to scalding hot, you know, ridiculously insane take to say he's going to outperform Gerrit Cole. But I think it is pretty warm to say, you know, he could outperform all the guys in front of him, and he's not really even necessarily guaranteed a rotation spot, but he's healthiest and he's got the goods. So, and man, the Yankees usage can be frustrating. I think it will be injuries that end up forcing the hand. As good as we've talked about this, Matt Kluber and Tyon, these guys have looked phenomenal, but my doubt has been less about the quality of the innings more than the quantity. So I'm afraid we're going to lose at least one or two of them. I mean, the Yankees, and I think Garcia is the next man up, and I think he holds on to that spot.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. The thing about that take is it's not, you know, it's not like a hot take because, you know, there's a lot of question marks behind Gerrit Cole. But, man, they have a lot of interesting pitchers there. I mean, they got, we already mentioned, they have Kluber, they have Tyon, they have Herman, who has looked good. They have Jordan Montgomery. They have, you know, some very promising prospects. I mean, they have some interesting names there. So it'll be. There's a lot of variance in who could finish there as the SP2. Before we move on, Garrett, Aaron Boone, we had talked about this the last episode with James Anderson. Aaron Boone had come out and said he fully expects Gerrit Cole to pitch 200 innings regardless of last year. What do you think?
No, I believe it. I really do. They didn't shovel all that money at him for nothing. We also don't exactly know how many innings these guys are throwing, quote unquote, right? Just because it wasn't a Major League Baseball game doesn't mean he didn't keep his throwing program going throughout the multiple spring trainings or whatever. It's just hard to label exactly how much workload he put in. I mean, he might have gotten to October, through October, I should say, and said that felt like a normal workload, you know, and they're just going ahead as he might. He's a horse, and they need to win. And like I said, he may be the one starter they're really, really relying on. So I don't think that's crazy. I think the list of those pitchers is very short, though, Matt. Cole just happens to be on it.
So my first warm take, it feels like a hot take now that I'm looking at it, but it's really not, in my opinion. I think that the one pitcher is going later than he should, and the other pitcher is going a little earlier. I think Sandy Alcantara outperforms Max Fried. Again, what is that? That's a warm take. That's not something like maybe I should say I think he does. I think he could, because they're similar pitchers in terms of what they want to do, and at least in terms of their chief, success comes from weak contact. And I always talk about Max Fried, and I love Fried. I think he's a Cy Young candidate who has the ability to strike people out, but I don't think he will because he has such success in just pitching to poor contact. That's what the Braves kind of do. So I don't think there's motivation for them to really change what he does. And if that's not the case, then there's no real ceiling beyond what we've seen if he doesn't want to make the next step. And Sandy Alcantara, for someone who's labeled as a weak contact guy, he throws gas. I mean, upper 90s gas. A lot of people don't realize that about him because he's known for like throwing double plays. He leads the spring in strikeouts right now, if I'm not mistaken. And if he can go out of the zone a little more with his stuff and the head of a very talented Miami lineup, maybe he doesn't get to Fried's level, but man, if he's not going to end up, I think, being a better call as far as a return on investment. I think Alcantara can outperform Max Fried this year.
Man, it's going to be tough for me to stay in the warm lane here and not get too hot.
Yeah, no, I read it, it definitely reads hot, but there's
I was going to go the other way. I don't know if you're hot enough. Like, and I kind of like Fried. You just happened to pick like the one, not to say the one guy, but one of the guys that I have pushed to the top of every single draft board. I absolutely love Alcantara. I think, gosh, you started warm. I'm going to go hot. Like, I think he's one of those guys in that 11, 12, 13 round that could move into the top 20 SPs this year, you know, move into the top 15 SPs this year. I really do. The velocity's up across the entire arsenal from last year. We always like to see that. We start dropping those walks. And it's funny, Matt, one thing that I generally don't like to see, right, in zone contact, we never want to see that go up, except when it's coming at the expense of all this weak contact that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. He's so very good around the edges of the zone. He has 5 good pitches. He doesn't have any great pitches, but he doesn't have any bad pitches. And I think there's something to that, in particular when you see the wide array of velocities that he could throw at, right? So he has gas at the top end, but at the low end, you know, you may see a 25 mile an hour difference in the arsenal, and they, you know, make all those different intervals between those pitches. And there's so much to like for Alcantara. I mean, I was doing some digging, and you know, he's one of the observed movement guys also. The sinker and the changeup have that same axis, but then they also mirror the curveball like almost perfectly, you know, that 6-hour difference. So he's using deception and pitch mix with location control and velocity. And now that he dipped those walk rate, the walk rate went down, the K rate kind of came up. And now I don't think he's ever going to be like a crazy whiz strikeout. So that, you know, top K leader that we're seeing, I don't think that's sustainable, but I do think he's going to be above average Ks. And considering that's a knock on him, and we already know he can go 7 innings, man, I love Alcantara. I have him everywhere. So I don't know if I spoil the warmness of that take because I like Fried, but I think he well outperforms Fried. I'm with you.
Yeah, and like, yeah, I agree. I don't think that there's room for him, for Alcantara, to be some kind of mega strikeout guy, but I think at minimum he will be a 9, you know, K per 9, a K per inning guy. And I think there's room for multiple
outings for him to outperform that. We've seen what he can do here. So, you know, like I said, it just takes a little bit of going out of the zone, and he's done that here in spring training. So it could be interesting. What is your next warm take on your list?
Oh, I had, it's funny, it wasn't warm coming into the draft season, but now it appears to be warm, maybe even bordering hot. And I'm looking at the top of the Atlanta lineup, and I think Dansby Swanson usurps Ozzy Albies again in that spot. Albies has been back at the top in the spring. So I think that's probably the plan, but I don't think it will be long. So I think even maybe a month or two in, I think Swanson's back in that really coveted two hole where he was so good for them last year.
Just curious, why do you feel that? Do you think that in 2020, obviously Albies saw his walk percentage drop and his strikeout percentage climb quite a bit. I mean, are you concerned that is going to stick? I mean, after a couple of years previous to that, it looked like he was more in a much safer zone. Is it more about liking Swanson, or do you think?
It's a little bit of both, but the walk rate just isn't great. I don't want to ding him too much for the K's in 2020, though. They are moving in the wrong direction. Same for the swinging strike rate. Again, not to ding him for the extra 2 points, but it's been pretty consistently in that double digits where I don't want it. So just in that two hole, he just has a couple of hiccups. You know, the on base percentage has shown to be volatile because he can't bank on the walk rate. I don't love the swinging strike rate, and I don't love the in zone contact kind of heading in the wrong direction. Also, I love to see that, you know, the 87 we saw more towards that 90 in the two hole. And don't get me wrong, it's not like I don't like Albies. I think it's what you said. I think this is the Swanson everyone thought we were going to see. And listen, hitting the six hole for Atlanta is not, you know, it's not bad. It's not bad. There's counting stats. There's going to be production there. But yeah, I think Swanson takes it back.
Yeah, I mean, I like Albies. He is my first second baseman off the board. I have zero shares, though. I'm not comfortable taking him where he goes. I don't want to throw out the name Andrew Benintendi because that's not what he's being. And plus, Andrew Benintendi has fantastic plate discipline even when he struggles. But he, in terms of like getting worse, being too aggressive. I mean, you see, Ozzy Albies' barrel percentage has gone from 3.3 to 4 to 6.2 to 9.1. That's fantastic. But it's coming at the expense of him being more aggressive. Like you said, the contact percentage is going down, the swing percentage is going, swing strike percentage is going up, and he's chasing more. And you look at like last year, he batted 271 with an expecting batting average of 240. So it was even worse than it actually looked like on paper. So I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if Swanson outperformed Albies. It wouldn't. I would say I wouldn't think it would happen. But yeah, I wouldn't call that actually too crazy at all. And obviously the reason Albies is going as high he is, a big portion of that is the fact that he's playing second base. And that becomes a cesspool very quickly in drafts.
Yeah.
My next one, I've actually said this quite a few times by now, but I think Willy Castro is this year's Trent Grisham.
Wow, that's a good one.
I love Willy Castro. One thing is when he's in the minor leagues, sorry if anyone's heard this from me before, but when Willy Castro was in the minor leagues, he was known as a speed guy. I mean, that was kind of his claim to fame when he came up. You know, he stole in 2015, he stole 20 bases. 2016, he stole 16. 2017, 19. In 2018, he stole over 20. I mean, this guy steals bases. That's kind of what he did. Then he comes up last year in only 129 at-bats, hits 6 home runs, bats 349, albeit on a 448 BABIP. So I don't expect that. But in the minors, you know, he carried a decent enough batting average, and he had hit double-digit home runs multiple times. The thing here is he was smoking the ball last year. And in spring training, he actually, for a while, had two of the hardest – he had two of the 10 hardest hit balls in all of spring training for a while. Last year, his barrel percentage was 9.6.
Yeah.
And I think that we definitely, if we see some of that speed that was missing last year that he showed all throughout the minor leagues, we could be in for a Trent Grisham-like year, and he's going very late, available usually at short and third. He's, you know, not highly touted as Grisham is, but he has one thing going for him that Grisham doesn't this year, and he's batting third every day probably for the Tigers, whereas Grisham could lead off or bat ninth depending on who's on the mound. So This isn't a bash on Grisham. It's more of just the value of Castro. Like I said, I'm not saying Castro will outperform Grisham. I'm just saying he is this year's Grisham. If you're looking for that, maybe that late round guy that has an opportunity for those home runs and steals, don't draft like Jared Kelenic. Most prospects, again, most prospects fail expectations. Not saying most prospects fail. Most prospects fail expectations in fantasy. Even the great ones usually struggle year one. And I'm not saying the Kelenic will be bad. I'm banking on him kicking ass out of the gate. But yeah, if you're looking for that power and speed combo late, Willy Castro has proven in the minors he has speed, has proven at the major league level he has power, and has had a terrific spring available at a couple of positions at a premium spot in a lineup that is not going to be as bad as people think. So I love Willy Castro.
How many home runs do you think he hits, Matt?
I think that he can approach 20.
Okay, so you're higher than the projection systems. How about the steals?
This is tough to see because it's a matter of, I don't know what the Tigers have planned for him, but again, I will go with like maybe 12 to 15 with a
I'm just looking at this log now, and people obviously, you know, not just because Matt said so, but you got to look when he mentions it. I really, Castro kind of slipped past me, and this is really an interesting stat page, like you said, considering the price, of course. Man, very rarely do you see those kind of steal numbers and then that kind of drop off to goose eggs, and only zero steals one caught, zero steals one caught, two pro seasons. Now, granted, it wasn't a ton. It was only 250 plate appearances, but man, for a guy that can steal over 20 bags, you'd think we'd have seen a bit more action. So I guess, yeah, I guess the potential is there, and it's up to the Tigers.
Yeah, where you drafted him, there's no risk for him not stealing bases. So he can do what he's going to do without stealing bases and still return value. I think the average and the power will be there in multiple positions. But if he does steal, it's just a fantastic, fantastic return on investment.
Yeah, especially if you were to cherry pick, and I know you can't really do this. I talk on my show and my own stuff. I've been using the Bat X because I think it aligns with my own stuff. My own work is kind of, you know, that's where it's landed. But if you were to kind of cherry pick these projections, taking the very best, there is a huge profit to be had on Willy Castro if you're to take the best. You know, Zips has him up at 277, 16 and 10, 73 and 72. Now, I didn't do the auction calculations, but that's a huge profit. I don't need the calculator to tell you that.
All right, so moving on to the next one. Who's the next warm take you have on your list?
Okay, my warm take is that Raisel Iglesias is the top closer this year.
All right, and nice.
Why? Because nobody knows. Okay, that's about as subjective as I can get. And it's kind of half a cop-out, but not really. It's very tough to repeat. I think Hendricks has the goods. It's not really a condemnation on him. Maybe my take gets a little less hot if I were to say I have him number two, you know, and Diaz at three. I just think people are so locked into Diaz or Hendricks being the one because of skill and stuff, and I just don't think it works that way. I think Iglesias in the new situation is fully locked, you know, for all of the situations, you know, all the save ops. And I think I like that his new offense isn't so great, right? Maybe we could make an argument that Hendricks misses some opportunities because they just slug, you know, through the Indians bullpen or the Royals bullpen. And, you know, those, the difference in scoring is too great for a save. So maybe the Angels keep Iglesias in it a bit more. And I've been drafting him as a kind of a one, and it's probably based on cost. So that's like not too hot, not too cold.
I don't disagree. I mean, I think Edwin Diaz is going to be the RP1, and I still think that is a somewhat of a warm take because it's similar lines of what you want to do with Iglesias. I think that Iglesias is the safer pick because no one is really breathing down his neck for opportunities, but I don't think anyone's breathing down Diaz either. I mean, Trevor May is there, Seth Lugo coming back at some point. They're not going to split up the job as much as some people insinuate they will. So I think Diaz is just too good, and, you know, nothing wrong with Chapman. It's just, I think Diaz is just superior as far as talent goes. And Hendricks has other arms in the bullpen there that can do work. Tony La Russa is pretty old school, so he'll probably stick with him. But, as good as Hendricks is, Diaz at his best is better. And Hader, we never know what's going on with him. He had a lot of problems with control, you know, command last year and early in spring training. He can give up the long ball. So all the reasons you kind of listed for Iglesias, I think Diaz will be RP1 just because I think he's just a better.
Yeah, you know, it's the same. Yeah, the argument works there too, sure.
Yeah, it's the same kind of thing. My next warm take is, I don't know if it's that hot. It's so warm. I mean, that's the point here. I think Zach Wheeler is better than Blake Snell, which they're not too far apart in people's rankings. But I mean, last year, obviously Blake Snell, who's won a Cy Young award, is pretty damn fantastic. He had a 2.92 ERA, 3.22 FIP, and got taken out early in the playoffs, and that's why the Rays lost the World Series, allegedly. So the big problem here is, the innings, right? He got taken out for a reason. They don't let him pitch deep into games. He had elbow issues as early as last year. And San Diego has a lot of options. They could go with a six-man rotation, which could just decrease his overall chances on the mound. And when he does go out there, I don't know if he'll definitely make it through a whole season going deep into games and getting decisions. Not that the bullpen there in San Diego is bad. It's fantastic, but it definitely sucks not to have more innings per game. Zach Wheeler, on the other hand, has proven at this point in his career to actually be a workhorse. His early career injuries are well behind him. He's pitched over 200 innings the last couple of full seasons he had. As far as like chase rate, like last year, 35.5 O-swing for Blake Snell. Zach Wheeler, 36.1. The big thing everyone's dinging Zach Wheeler for, even though he had a fantastic year at a 2.92 ERA and a 3.22 FIP, which is, very on par with what Snell did, is that Wheeler mixed in his sinker was a lot more effective last year and he was getting more contact. So his strikeout rate was down to like 18.4%, where it's usually up in like, the mid-20s, which is where you'd want it to be. And it pretty much just comes down to called strikes, because instead of like kind of sneaking him in the strike zone, he was getting people to make a lot more weak contact, and he's been working on it more. And I think his strikeout rate is going to be raised again. So I think what you have is Blake Snell is always going to have a higher strikeout rate just because he does get the called strikes and, he gets the swinging strikes as well. He has the Blake Snell method, up and in, down and away. He has, right. He has a plan. He has a blueprint for getting done what he does, but Zach Wheeler has the same swinging miss stuff. He just uses it a different way. So I think between the slight difference in K rate, which I think Wheeler is going to crawl back up to where he was mid-20s. You don't have to worry about the innings with him. And he has a decent enough team around him. The NL West is not a picnic where Blake Snell traveled to. They both will have the DH to contend with. But yeah, I think the innings is a much bigger deal than the difference in K rate. So yeah, absolutely. Give me Zach Wheeler. I think Wheeler outperforms Blake Snell. And I think Zach Wheeler is someone that is not getting enough respect in the draft season.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. And I agree. Pretty much everywhere. And I would just add the one thing that I've been kind of talking about when it comes to these, not to make everything so binary that it's vanilla and chocolate, black and white, but if we were to kind of separate pitchers into, right, the high impact, high K, less distance, or more vanilla, more distance, kind of guys, Wheeler especially has just been this kind of dismissed, right? Like he's getting the wave of the hand. And the thing I've been talking about is expanding the denominator in regards to trying to make that total strikeout number. So yeah, Snell might get, six Ks in five innings, let's say, right? So it's more than a K per nine and it's super exciting, a ton of strikeouts, but the distance isn't really there. And Wheeler might get the same six Ks, but he went for 7 1/3. So like by, ratios, it's not as good, but the total is the same. So I always try and keep that perspective in mind. He is a he's a seven inning guy. There's not many of those out there. He's a consistent seven inning guy. So I definitely think over the long term, and then especially I've been kind of cold on the NL West. I'm not crazy about feeding pitchers to the Dodgers and the Coors, Rockies at least. So I could see that totally. I really don't have any Snell.
I misspoke earlier when we're talking about Zach Wheeler versus Blake Snell right now. One thing I missed was I said over 200 innings. He hasn't done that. But in three out of his last four full seasons, he's gone over 180, 185 and a third, 182 and a third, 195 and a third. And then last year, he was one of only 17 pitchers to make it over 70 innings. So again,
the how about check this out, Matt. I've been doing everyone's kind of has their own little niche for 2020. Me, I'm just – it's very hard to use for me. So one thing I've been trying to do is go back to 2019 just to give us more of a full set. And just in that span, Wheeler has 113 more innings pitched.
Yeah.
266 to 157. You know, so, yeah, Snell has a 12 K per nine, and Wheeler's is below nine, but – Zach Wheeler still has, you know, 50 more strikeouts than Snell does in that time frame.
Yes, exactly. I was saying last year, there's the big here. This is the difference, everybody. I mean, 18 for Wheeler last year. And again, in a down year because of the called strikes, only an 18.4% K percentage, which is damn low. And Blake Snell is 31. And in your mind, you want to build that up as this gigantic difference. Only 10 strikeouts separated the two. 10 total. So if we're going to worry about innings and everything, I mean, you extrapolate that over a full season, Wheeler takes the lead. That's the difference. That's what innings will do. So, you know, sometimes you got to put K per nine in your back pocket in Roto because you want to see over a full year. It's like why Mondesi over a small period, he could kill you, but over a full season, he could steal 60 bases. There's just some things you have to take the long view on, and innings pitched is certainly one of them.
Yeah.
All right. So do you have another one on your list?
I got one more good one. I got another good one for you. Giovanni Urshela finishes as a top 10 third baseman. Now, I don't
know. Is that warm? I think that's like a guarantee.
Whoa, no, it can't be. Hold on. Let's go to the videotapes. I happen to have it right here. So just a second. How about, oh, he can use ATC, right? He's kind of an averager guy. So it depends on the projection system. But I mean, no, if you're using ATC 3, 5, 10, 13, 15, he's outside 3B1 territory. If you were to go by ATC, which is, you know, an aggregator. If you were to look at the highest one, I think it might be depth charts. He sneaks in just as a 10. So that's kind of where I was going, Matt, is no projection system has him higher than a 10. I think only one has him as the 10th. He would have to... we'd have to finish in front of some. He'd have to finish in front of some pretty big names.
I guess you know what it is. I forget how deep that position is.
Yeah, it's extremely deep.
In NFBC for the last month, at least in OC leagues, he's going 19 as the third baseman. I mean,
right. So okay, I mean, so 10 makes him warm. 10 makes him warm, and mm-hmm. It was I believe it was the depth charts. Yeah, so which I also like the depth charts projections. Have Urshela as the 10th. And he's in front of Moncada, which I disagree with, but he's behind Baum, and I think he could outperform Baum. And then, you know, he's behind kind of the stalwarts, which I think it becomes difficult to put him in front of Chapman, Suarez, Rendon, Bregman, Devers, Machado, or Ramirez. But I think right after that, including Arenado, I think he could slide right in there. He looks excellent. The glove is, like, elite. He's going to be playing every single day. And, Matt, something you and I have spoke about, maybe not this season, was how important surrounding talent is. And it's funny, Urshela gets protection from, like, the 7-hole. You know, he's protected. You have no choice but to go after him. You cannot afford to play around with Urshela knowing what's coming around the bend. So he's always going to benefit from that. And he's got all the plus park factors, and he's got all the terrible pitching that the Orioles and the Red Sox have to offer. So I love Urshela. I could see drafting him as a third baseman. To me, that is the hot take. I still would rather take him as a corner and hope that he's, you know, let's say like a top 5 corner.
Yeah. I should say, when I said that, you know what it is? Like, I look at ADP and I see DJ LeMahieu, Kevin Biggio, Jeff McNeil, Max Muncy, Edmund, Andrés Giménez. I don't consider them third basemen. So instead of 19, in my mind, he's like he's going as the 13th third baseman because I don't consider those guys options. But so fantasy,
obviously. He's ahead of Justin Turner?
Yeah.
What if I told you Turner plays 135 games?
I would say that I'd still rather have the full season out of Urshela.
Okay, what about Austin Riley?
No, I mean, Urshela, I think he's a 300 hitter. I think he's proven to be at this point. So yeah, give me Urshela. I think Riley could hit 40 bombs, but
working my way up. What about Chris Bryant?
I think that's close right there. Yeah. I think that Urshela is probably a much safer bet because of the batting average, and we don't know. I'm expecting a bounce back out of Bryant. So that's super close for me, but it wouldn't shock me either way.
Yeah, I had a feeling that that's where you were kind of would say that. I didn't even ask Segura because I didn't want you to say slam dunk Segura.
No, I'd say a Segura.
You love him. So do I. So do I.
Segura should not be a third. I don't consider him a third baseman.
Yeah. You know what? I agree with that.
There.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But he's, I love Urshela, though. I do.
I'll tell you, if there's one player, Matt, this season that a lot of people are not talking about that I have my fate tied to, it's Gene Segura.
Oh, me too.
He has fit perfectly into so many builds for me, average and some speed with some power and counting stats and a good environment. That man, if he's really good, I'm going to be a happy camper this year.
And by the time you draft him, you probably already have your second base and third base. So he becomes this ultra valuable middle infield / corner infield guy who steals bases.
Yeah. He can be such a great piece. And he's one of those, I don't know, I guess, you know, it's like a boring, like quote unquote, right? Kind of boring. And it's not boring to me because if you do happen to, you know, if he meets those projections, again, I'm looking at FanGraphs, the depth chart one. Actually, they all have him for 280, you know. So if you get 280, 15 and 10, 75 and 70, that's a monster contribution, especially if he's in your MI, which I know, I think you and I have him as an MI, and that's fantastic.
The next one is tough, but I'm going to say Pete Alonso actually returns value. And I was so off of him last year, and I'm being a hypocrite kind of because I have zero shares this year, but I think he hits 50 home runs again. Even last year in a completely down season, if anyone watched him, he was still on pace for over 40 home runs. That's incredible. And he looks locked in. Last year, he had no home runs in spring training and none in summer camp. He looked lost at the plate. He is locked in right now. And I think he's going to be in the middle of an even better lineup, you know, from a team that was number one in baseball with weighted runs created plus. They're even better this season. And I think Alonso is going to take off. And, you know, in a year where, you know, power, a lot of people like to get power late in first base. There's like options like Josh Bell. I love Christian Walker late. There's a lot of late options, but they come with a lot of risk. And I think Alonso is a pretty safe bet to return those home runs. So while he does not fit my team build, I'm death by 1,000 paper cuts. I like to get stolen bases in my, you know, first 10 rounds. I think that if you're drafting Pete Alonso expecting a 240 average and 45 plus home runs, I think he definitely gives it to you. And a lot of people will be listening to this going like, oh, you know, that's not worth taking there. It kind of is. Because I think it's safe. You know, there's other options like Matt Chapman that you can take later. But here's the thing is what you're expecting out of him based on his metrics is what he can do. Pete Alonso has hit 50, and in a down year, in his second year, he's on pace for 40. So I think he has pretty much the most legit power in baseball, even over Joey Gallo. So if you're looking for power and you draft him, I think he will return value. I don't think he's a great fit for a lot of team builds. But I think if that's what you want from him, that's what you're going to get.
I think a lot of the sharp money is agreeing with you, Matt. Now, a lot of people know, and if you don't, the main events are starting to happen. Granted, it's a small sample set, but I would argue that that is one small sample set that's worth at least looking at. If anything, for a comparative analysis to more general ADP. And what I was getting at is Alonso is, man, he's up a full like round and a half. 15 team. So, you know, he's up like almost 20 picks from recent ADP. I've been very careful about that. Something I spoke about on Cork Stats. I'm using 30 days right now and then kind of zooming in and kind of using the main event to try and get an idea lay of the land, let's say. But the sharp money is on Pete Alonso, Matt. So I'm just guessing they're assuming that they're going to get 255 north of 42 home runs. And then I think, considering the lineup, 42 home runs from Alonso should be at least 190 ribbies plus runs.
Yeah, I mean,
so look, I think that answers, man, I got to get better with this, with doing the auction calculating in my head. It's got to be close to at least, you know, listen, not every pick is going to return huge. And sometimes the picks up top, you just, like you said, need want to just return. You know, you could take stabs of power that come with tremendous sinkholes. I tend to think of Alonso as at least a 250 hitter. It's not a batting average boost, but he shouldn't kill you either.
Exactly. That I think that's the big thing where people have him down for being a batting average hole, and he's not. In 2019,
no, I don't think so.
He batted 260 with 53 home runs, 103 runs, and 120 RBIs. And the team he's playing on this year is significantly better than the 2019 team.
Oh, coming up, he was an average beast. He was like a 300 guy. He was power and average, something that you and I have spoke about. I guess we speak about baseball a lot. One of those things that I look for to transition from the minor leagues, I'm thinking of Alex Kirilloff right now. Him, maybe he's more of a pure hitter, less power, that it might transfer over more immediately. But Alonso has that bat control in the repertoire. So again, I don't think he's ever going to hit 320, but yeah, if he becomes like a 268 or 270 guy, none of us should be that shocked. And that would be a difference in a pretty big profit. I think that would tip the scales for him and definitely make him worth that fifth round pick.
Yeah, I think, and people are just, they're assuming the worst for no reason. Again, he batted 260 with the 50 home runs. In 2018 in triple A, he batted 260 with a nearly identical BABIP, and he, you know, batted 284. And then earlier in his career, he batted 314 and 333. He batted 231 last year with a 242 BABIP. I mean, that tells you all you need to know. In 2019, he had a 10.4 walk rate. 2020, 10% walk rate. Strikeout rate in 2019 was 26.4. Last year, he lowered it to 25.5. In AAA, it was 11% walk rate and 25.9. In AA, it was 15.8% walk rate, 18.3% K rate. I mean, there could be further growth in the walk department and strikeout department this year, which if you add in a normalized BABIP, which, you know, just walk with me here. Like, I think he can return value, but if he has further growth in walk and strikeouts with a normalized BABIP and he has the power that we know he has, easy. I mean, you're talking about, a lot of people want to talk about, could you get this kind of power late? Of course you could. Franmil Reyes is a good example, but at first base, which does dry up faster than you think, as far as sure things go, he is one of the more surefire bets for power there is. And the batting average is nowhere near as bad as people make it out to be.
Yeah. I actually like Alonso. It's funny. He goes back to what I mentioned earlier about different formats. I'm with you, Matt. And there goes that kind of overly analytical eye sometimes where he just doesn't fit into my roto builds because I am terrified of zero steal guys. But I love Alonso. He's a best ball target. You know, he's an underdog winner. Like, that's, you know, and that's kind of how you have to think, right? Through different lenses, you know, different puzzles have different answers. So I love Alonso. I'm having trouble fitting him in roto, although in a very tough room, I could see it happening where I've taken, let's see, it's been Marcell Ozuna, or let's say Eugenio Suarez, when I haven't gone heavy power to start. You know, I like to start with maybe J-Ram, or even let's say you start with Trea Turner. Both of those guys could hit you 28 homers, but it probably feels more safe to guess 22 or 24. And then if you go pitcher, you know, you could end up without that big power upside guy. So yeah, I think they definitely could fit. Yeah.
We're just talking about Pete Alonso, returning value. The next one I have is Cedric Mullins finishes well ahead of Leody Taveras.
Well,
I just let it go. I want to hear your reaction.
I was looking for some kind of temperature reference for that. I mean, okay.
Taveras is being drafted as the 160 in the 160s. And
okay, well,
Cedric Mullins is being drafted in the 360s.
Right. Let me speak to the comment. I think you're right. I think where that comment just kind of had me tongue-in-cheek is, I'm not a Taveras believer. I think that spot me being a lot of jeopardy. And he kind of screams to me, I'm one of those guys that could lose my job 5 weeks into the season because I'm not any good. And that's kind of my fear.
I don't even think he should make the opening day roster.
Yeah, you're not the only person that said that, Maddie. I'm not drafting him. And it's funny, I kind of wish you would have picked somebody better because I like your Mullins.
A lot of people aren't even drafting Mullins, especially in 12-team formats. Some people still aren't drafting this guy. He's going to bat leadoff for Baltimore.
How about this? I'll give you a good comp because you're a Met guy. Cedric Mullins, Brandon Nimmo. That's a good one.
It's only a good one if Nimmo's injured. I think I wanted to come up with one for Nimmo. If Nimmo is healthy for an entire year, he is a top 30 player to on base percentage.
You think? Yeah, but yeah. You got the caveat. OBP. It's been a running theme for me, I should say. I am terrified of usage in Queens right now.
I take your point though. I think given what we know about Nimmo's injury history and the fact that they have talked about, you know, moving people around, maybe getting Pilar in. I think there's concern there. And I think Mullins is, I believe in Nimmo's talent. As Tavares, I think he has some growing pains coming. So yeah. I think that Mullins is a better bet ADP wise for sure than Nimmo probably.
You're expecting Mullins to kind of top third the lineup every day. Or is it?
I expect there is a lot of things that are in spring training. They're a waste, but I'll tell you one thing. Mullins bats leadoff every time they have the regular lineup in, and not the top third leadoff. He's leading off every time.
Just to verify, Matt, as always, is correct. I'm looking at Mike Kurland's spring training board, one of these awesome new tools, props to Mike Kurland. Follow him on Twitter. This thing is really great. No one has really given us this ability to look at a lineup, you know, side by side. Mullins is leading off every day. And this guy, I don't even know where he is on the draft board. I'm only hip to him now because of you, Matt. And he immediately feels like I hate saying league winner because we talk about this. It takes more than one guy, but let's call it like a standings changer. He feels like a standings changer.
Yeah, he's a difference maker. And
here we go.
In 2019, he had 10 home runs and 34 stolen bases. In the majors for 2020, he had in 153 plate appearances, he had 3 home runs, 7 stolen bases, batted .271. You take what he can do over a full season, double digit home runs, which again over a full season in Camden Yards could do anything if you add in, you know, a few weird things here and there, and 30 stolen bases. Absolutely. I love some Cedric Mullins this year. So again, we're talking right now how I think Cedric Mullins is going to outperform Leody Tavares, and it won't be close because again, Tavares growing pains coming, fantastic ceiling, slated to bat ninth for the Rangers, not guaranteed to keep that job versus Mullins, who is, again, Tavares in the Globe Life Park, which is a place that ruined Joey Gallo's home run swing last year.
Now, it's funny. Mullins, I'm looking at him now, Matty. Mullins is another one of these guys that the projection systems just do not believe in the batting average.
Well, they're also only giving up. They're also only giving him like 340 at-bats.
Wow. Okay. Everyone stop. That was the point of points for everybody to remember and earmark, and I just let it get past me, and it happens. When you're looking at projections, look at the plate appearances. That's correct, Matt. He's not listed anywhere except for Zips, which is funny because Zips gives him .569 and the stats are not any good. But so forget him. But yeah, if you were to give him .525 with any of these other ones, wow, he's like a 18-20 almost kind of guy, or like 16-21.
So yeah, I believe in it. Leading off, Cedric Mullins. This next one, I don't know. This is probably a popular take at this point, but Robbie Ray outperforms Denelson Lamet.
All right, this one I'm going to go no. I'm not buying the Robbie Ray-ness. I'll gladly lose on that one. I have made so much money in my life betting against Robbie Ray. I just can't go against that record.
Well, that's the thing. That's where your expertise is flawed for this particular player, because him doing well isn't necessarily tied to his fantasy value because of the strikeouts. He can strike out 15 in a game and get clobbered.
Yeah, Ray terrifies me. He always does. You know, the walk rates are consistently in the double digits, and then it spiked last year to some absurd number. Yeah, 18%. Walk rate. I mean,
here's the thing. Throw out last year because he was tinkering with his freaking his wine.
Okay, know, I'll give you that. I'll throw a 2020.
Let's take 2019 because the years before that he was 3.9 and 2.8 ERA. Throw them out the window. Let's take 2019, 4.3 ERA. If he does that with like a 12 K per nine, which is like a 31.5 with 31.5% K rate. I think that outperforms Danilson Lamet. Because Ray is going to be pitching, I think, like 150, 160 innings.
Okay, yeah, I guess I should have made you qualify the distance parameters here.
I don't think Lamet gets this. I don't think Lamet gets to 70.
You can't see them the same, right? So yours is predicated on Lamet not getting a full complement. What if I told you Lamet gets 105 innings? Right, I'm not going to go 160. I don't think he's going to get 160. I think he could get 125.
I think I still take Ray.
See, okay, I think that's where maybe it's me. I view injury guys a little differently. I don't mind high impact injury guys because, again, we don't necessarily know they're going to be hurt. And if they do get hurt, then I get to replace them. I'm more worried about guys that could really hurt you.
I'm worried about Lamet being able to go full effort.
Yeah, I know.
Even if he goes 100 innings, I'm not sure he's necessary. For the guy with a limited arsenal, he better be going full effort. And I'm not necessarily sure with the way the team is handling him, because apparently he's not injured, yet he hasn't thrown.
Yeah, you're right. And he's not going to start the season with the rotation, it sounds like.
Yeah, so
I think they said that already.
Even if you guaranteed me 100 innings, I don't think I'm taking him.
Yeah, it's funny. Lamet really, he's a strange case here because of the handling of it. It's been kind of vague and right. The messages have been mixed and they certainly don't line up with the reality, right? One day it's, he looks great. He's throwing smoke and you're like, okay, so he's going to pitch. Whoa, but we didn't go that far. He's not going to pitch or anything. Like, well, he's got to, you know, he has to pitch. Then they said he should be in the rotation, but he hasn't thrown yet. And now it looks like Adrian Marahan is being penciled into that five spot. So, yeah, Lamet's a very tough situation. I'm not really drafting him anywhere. I do think he's phenomenal when he's on the mound, and I don't think that about Robbie Ray. So it's tough. That's a tough one for me. Sometimes maybe the answer is I don't really want either. I'd rather draft a catcher.
fair enough. The last one I have here I want to go over. Again, for anyone listening, we were just going over how I think that Robbie Ray is going to out-earn Danilson Lamet, which probably triggers everybody. Yeah, there's people that like Lamet, there's people that don't like Lamet, but then there's a lot of people that really don't like Robbie Ray. So I don't know. That one probably made everyone's eyes twitch. My last one is kind of not apples to apples because, you know, if a lot of people feel differently about utility only players, but this guy's going late enough where I don't think it matters. And when I say not apples to apples is I'm about to compare a utility only guy to someone who gets drafted due to position eligibility. So it's completely whacked out. But those two things added in, I still would rather have Franmil Reyes over Max Muncy.
Well, that's a good one. It's funny you the way you framed it. I thought it was going to be more out there. I actually like that one. I'm not crazy about Muncy, and I have really dug Franmil in the past. I wonder. I think maybe my answer is what your expectations were. So. If you're taking Muncy thinking that, you know, he's like a 35 homer guy, and I know he's done it twice, so it's hard for me to say he's not. He's a guy I worry about, like similar to Pete Alonso, right? The worries that people have attributed to Pete Alonso, those I have legitimately from Muncy.
Well, here's the thing, real quick, just to piggyback, because concerns for Muncy, something no one's talking about. I mean, I think he's proven to have the power. But, you know, he also proved to have a trap door in his batting average. We saw it last year. I know it was low BABIP, but it's of his own design as well. He's a weird plate discipline guy like Kevin Biggio, which is how a lot of his success comes. The problem here that no one's discussing is that is a very loaded lineup, which is a plus for Muncy. Counting stats are going to be through the roof.
Yeah.
The problem is Dave Roberts says Gavin Lux is going to play every day. Chris Taylor's probably going to get his at-bats. Everyone assumes it's a battle between those two. Why is Max Muncy guaranteed at-bats when we know his batting average floor is, I can see this guy losing at-bats and no one's talking about it?
That's actually a really good point. I have, for all the talk, I should say, we've heard about the Dodgers and shifting with usage and Taylor and Lux, Will Smith and Barnes, right? Everybody, they just seem to be wearing a platoon on their sleeve right now. Muncy certainly is a candidate to at least maybe get knocked down in the lineup a couple of days, maybe get replaced defensively, or even just miss two games a week outright because they have talent kind of pouring out of their ears. So I like that call. Yeah, it's funny, Matt. I think our styles are too similar maybe for this exercise, because I'm with you. Like, I'm with you 100%. You're picking out guys I don't really like. I'm not drafting Muncie. He's not a my guy. I've been avoiding the batting average headaches, because he's that, if you ask me. Right? If I told you he puts up a 235, even if he hit 36 homers, that's in the cards. It's hard to recover from that.
All right, and I'm telling everyone, checking back in, I'm talking about how I'd rather have Franmil Reyes than Max Muncy, regardless of position eligibility, which what is a big difference between the two. A lot of people are giving, if you look at projections, Franmil Reyes, they have him down for like a 250 average, whereas in 2018 in San Diego, when he hit 16 home runs and 260 at-bats, he batted 280 with a 345 BABIP. This past season, he batted 275 with a 355 BABIP. He has he hits the ball hard enough to carry that BABIP in that area. He's done it twice, and he's done it with a 275 and 280 average. Granted, when he hit 37 home runs in 2019, he only batted 249, but again, 279 BABIP. So I think that, you know, as far as everything altogether, I think you're looking at over a 300 BABIP, maybe not in the 340 area, but I think he's proven that he can do that. I think he's at least a 320, 330 guy. So instead of 250 average, I think you're looking at closer to 270 with a guy that can hit upwards of 40 home runs.
Yeah,
he may not have the run score.
They're doing their thing again here. A guy that's a 263 career hitter. Granted, it's on the back of some BABIP spiking, like you mentioned, but even when the BABIP was not there, the average was 250. I mean, 279 is pretty low. They regress it, the BABIP back to the low 300s, which makes sense, but they didn't take the batting averages with it, which I find odd, right? So I understand all this, right? The 345 gave it a 280, the 280 gave it a 250. Gotcha. But if you're penciling him in for 305, why is he still at that 249, where I think it's somewhere in the middle? And I don't think he's a 250. I think the higher end, you might be right, 270. But I think his career batting average is right on point. I think he's a 260 guy. And those 10 batting average points really make a difference, because they're going to affect the counting stat projections and, of course, affect the value, the total value, because of the BA. So these projections, or you know, just any projections, man, if you have him there 270, you got to circle Fred. And that makes Reyes a must draft.
Well, here, let's look at ATC. You talk to Ariel and he'll tell you, this is all of his projection is basically a bunch of projections put into differently. And he weights some things differently, but he's always very successful as far as up against any other projections. They have Franmil Reyes down for a 260 average, with 34 home runs, 77 runs, 90 RBIs. They have Max Muncy down for a 235 average, 30 home runs, 87 runs, 83 RBIs. I mean, even if people are hawking over the projections, the answer is kind of staring you right in the face there. Like, what are we? Is it just the position eligibility everyone's hung up on? Because again, I think that. Both guys are capable of hitting 40 home runs. I don't think it's ever happening for Muncy again, whereas Franmil, I think it's definitely in the cards. And I think Muncy is at risk for being moved down the lineup or out of the lineup altogether, whereas Franmil is never in danger of that happening.
Yeah, it's a context thing. It's a narrative thing. For all the great information out there, the market still gets some things wrong. And that's fine, right? We don't want it to be too sharp or then there'd be no opportunities for us. Yep. Yeah, not sure what kind of lens, other than position eligibility, which you mentioned. And I don't know, man. UT is not the worst thing in the world to have a UT guy.
Especially that late.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Right. Nobody – that's really the best point, I think, Matt. You got to be careful targeting these guys so early, because that could hamstring your lineup. By the time you get to Reyes, the lineup is pretty much set already. So you put him at the U, and he's the best U in the game, or one of them, especially at the price. And yeah, considering the difference in cost, that's a slam dunk for me for sure.
Yeah, because I mean, and one thing I think some, again, in DCs and, you know, like draft and holds, the position eligibility can really be a lifesaver.
Yeah.
But when it comes down, you look at Muncy at first, second, and third. Are you really playing him anywhere outside of second on a regular basis?
No, he's a second baseman.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think sometimes that gets a little overblown, at least for guys that early. I mean, there's nothing wrong with like drafting a Andrés Giménez or a Chris Taylor or even a Luis Urias late in drafts because you want to be able to move him around. But Max Muncy, you're drafting him that early, so you don't have to worry about second base, most likely.
Right. Right. And I'm sure we could play the same projection games up to Mike Moustakas. They probably look very similar, and Moustakas might even have a better batting average. So yeah, but Muncy for me just doesn't pass all the filters that I like to run on guys, especially with the price. I can't get over the fact we're talking about it like a 80 pick difference or something like that, maybe more.
Anyway, so those are our warm takes. You know, there's just a few of them. Let us know your warm takes. I mean, we're going to be posting this on Twitter. Post it underneath of the show. You know, tell us what your warm takes are. Something that you think that legitimately is going to happen this season that, you know, is not too far out there. Something you could back up. You know, give us your explanation. We'll read them on the next show. So, John, baseball, it's almost here. I'm so freaking excited.
Yes.
I can't contain myself.
Oh, I can't wait, man. I'm at the stage where MLB Network is on all day right now, so I kind of have the sounds going on in the background. But I try not to get too obsessed with it because, you know, we've done so much work leading up to it. We got to be careful what we apply. But, yeah, I cannot wait. We're right here. And, yeah, everybody, right, I guess check out my stuff. I'm on FTNFantasy.com. Lots of free draft kit stuff. Check out the Cork Stats podcast. And once the season kicks off, I get away from the kind of interview-style stuff, and it's – I'm covering every single game. We're going to be doing fantasy, streaming, betting, and DFS at like 115 EV. So, Matt, thanks for having me. I had a lot of fun, man.
Hey, thanks for coming on. Everyone, follow me on Twitter, MATTWI77IMS. Make sure to download the Underdog Fantasy app, the proud sponsor of the Turn 2 Podcast. Follow Turn 2 at Turn 2 Podcast on Twitter. And, yeah, we'll be back next week. Baseball is approaching, everybody. See you.
My, oh, my. Me and coach, I'm ready to play fantasy. I know I turn two in a day, but the lace isn't hot in my veins. I can turn two in every way, so I turn to you two today and smash play. I'm prepared to listen. The X flipping whip got me looking way past the pitches. Statistics all that I know, and I know that who is on first, he can say I'm ready to go. I ain't trying to steal second or third, cause I wanna win first. How am I to put all of these numbers to words? I know the terms from A to Z, it's like a gift and a curse. I know the difference between a splitter and a curb, but if I can't put it in the points, man, then what's it worth? I need the truth, I need knowledge. Found this podcast with all of it, but what they call it? Turn two, turn two, turn two, what it do? Win leagues, catch out.